Reading from the book of Daniel, chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility, young men, without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The court official gave them new names. To Daniel, he gave the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. So he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and sympathy to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I am afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your daily food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men your age? Then the king would have my head because of you." Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please, test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. And so the guard took away their choice food and wine, which they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead. To these 4 young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. Congregation of Christ, I'd like to ask you a question. If you're a young person, and I use that phrase in its widest sense, from the child who's kindergarten age to the young person in college. If you were taken from your home, your church, and your country to a foreign land, and there you were indoctrinated in that land's religion and culture, a culture diametrically opposed to the religion of the one true God who reveals himself in the Bible, if that were to take place, how well and how long would you be able to stand for Christ? If you're a parent, maybe you want to ask yourself the question, would my children be able to stand for Christ if such a thing were to come to pass? Consider also that you would remain in that land for the rest of your life, constantly under the influence of a culture intent on eradicating the claim of God on you. Apart from your parents, apart from the land of your birth, apart from the church, would you be able to stand for Christ? Or would you eventually give in, adopt the culture of the land, and live a life that doesn't reflect the God of the Bible or the Christ who saves you? That's what it was like for Daniel and his three friends. At a young age, they were taken away from the land of Judah and brought to Babylon. They were the cream of the crop as far as Hebrew children went. They were from the noble families of Judah and possibly even from the royal line. The king had Ashpenaz, his court official, choose them because they were unblemished in their appearance and because they showed aptitude for every kind of learning. There in Babylon, they lived with other children who were also taken from their native lands. There, each day, they received indoctrination in the religion and culture of the Babylonians. They learned the language of Babylon. Whether they were allowed to speak Hebrew there, we don't know. They were taught the literature of Babylon, which was primarily religious. They were trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. How well would you, if you're a young person, or your children, if you're a parent, be able to stand under such circumstances? The question isn't a hypothetical question. You don't have to be shipped off to Babylon or to some other strange country to face indoctrination in the anti-Christian system of this world. You get it right here, in our own country and in our own land. A godless, anti-Christian culture has long ago seized the day in America. And it's never been more important to know how to stand for the Lord in the midst of that Christ-denying culture. Since we're beginning a study of the book of Daniel this morning, it would be beneficial to have a brief instruction to the situation that led up to the events described in this book. In verse 1, we read that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, laid siege to Jerusalem in the third year of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. Do you know the series of events that led up to that? There had been a long history of departing from God among both Israel and Judah. It was worse in the north, in Israel. But Judah in the south was only a few years behind. When you read the Bible's record of the nation of Israel under the kings, you find that the people turned away from God, and so did their leaders. The northern kingdom is described as having no good kings. Every one of them is said to have turned away from the Lord. In the south, in Judah, there are at least some good kings. You can probably count them on one hand, though. But through these kings, God restrained and delayed the eventual fall of Judah. But it did come eventually. One of those good kings was Hezekiah. When God allowed the Assyrians to punish the northern kingdom, God used Hezekiah's prayer to spare Judah and Jerusalem. The story is so significant that you find it in the Bible twice, in 2 Kings chapter 18 and in Isaiah 37. Sometime after God delivered Jerusalem from the Assyrians, Hezekiah got sick. He had a boil that would have proved fatal had not God intervened. In fact, Isaiah the prophet warned Hezekiah that he was going to die. But the Lord was merciful. He heard Hezekiah's prayer and granted him another 15 years of life. It was a very remarkable answer to prayer. News of the healing spread as far as Babylon. The healing prompted Merodach-Baladan, the king of Babylon, to pay Hezekiah a visit and to bring him in a gift. Hezekiah rolled out the royal red carpet for the king of Babylon. And in both 2 Kings 20 and Isaiah 39, we have recorded how Hezekiah showed Merodach-Baladan all the wealth of his kingdom, what was in his storehouses, and all his treasures. Isaiah the prophet rebuked Hezekiah for doing that, and declared that the day would come when the wealth of his kingdom would be carried off to Babylon. Now the question needs to be asked, why was the Lord so upset with Hezekiah? You see, this account wasn't included in our Bible simply to warn us that showing off your wealth to others may make you the target of someone else's greed. When Merodach-Baladan visited Hezekiah, each king was worried about the Assyrian threat. Each was aware that standing united against the Assyrians was in the best interest of his kingdom. The gift brought by the king of Babylon was to procure friendship and an alliance. And Hezekiah's showing Merodach-Baladan all his kingdom's wealth was an effort to convince him that Judah was a worthy ally. It had resources that could be counted on and trusted. You see, that was Hezekiah's mistake. Instead of trusting the Lord for his kingdom's security, as he did when the armies of Sennacherib came against Jerusalem, Hezekiah began trusting in alliances and in the wealth he had obtained. Even good kings make mistakes. This mistake would be the precipitating cause of the wealth of Jerusalem being taken to Babylon. It's not wrong to have gold or possessions, or to make investments or to buy insurance. It's not wrong to have a military or to make alliances. But the moment we put our trust in those things rather than in the Lord, we're in serious spiritual danger. You notice that verse 2 of Daniel 1 says that the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. No nation on earth could stand against God's people if they had trusted in God. But this course of events we read of in the opening verses of Daniel came to pass because previously, in the time of Hezekiah, Judah sought its security in human alliances rather than in the Lord. And that pattern continued after Hezekiah had left the scene. The articles of gold from the temple of the Lord in Jerusalem were carried off to Babylon and placed in the temple in the treasure house of Nebuchadnezzar's God. At the king's command, young men from Judah were transported to Babylon to be trained to enter the king's service. The Babylonians had a program for change. Daniel and his three friends were taken away to be educated in a culture bent on erasing the stamp of God on their lives. They were given an education in the language and literature of the Babylonians. Now, this wasn't a neutral education, if there is such a thing. Babylonian literature, as we know it from archaeology, was profoundly religious. The literature Daniel and his three friends were studying not only told of the great exploits of the kings of Babylon, but it told how the gods of Babylon gave them the victory. Daniel and his friends would learn the Babylonian story of creation and the Babylonian version of the great flood. They'd learn all about Gilgamesh and Utnapishtim. They'd learn about Marduk and Bel, the gods of the Babylonians, and how to serve them. And they'd be instructed in magic and astrology as well. After all, they were to serve as advisors to the king, and it was to the magicians and enchanters that the king turned when he needed advice. You see, the education they received was an education diametrically opposed to the religion of their forefathers, and it had as its aim converting them to the religion of the people of Babylon. We read that Daniel and his three friends were given new names, Babylonian names. This is very significant. Daniel and his three friends had Hebrew names, names which spoke of Israel's God and the claim that their God had on their lives. But in Babylon, they were given names to honor the gods of that nation, Daniel, whose Hebrew name means God is my judge, had his name changed to Belteshazzar, which means may the god Bel protect his life. Hananiah means the Lord, Yahweh, shows grace. But his name was changed to Shadrach, which means the command of Aku. Aku was the moon god. Mishael means who is what God is. His name was changed to Meshach. Who is what Aku is. And Azariah, whose name means the Lord, Yahweh, helps, or Yahweh is my helper, was changed to Abednego, the servant of Nebu, the Babylonian god of wisdom. Do you see what they did? They wanted to erase the name of the Lord, which was part of those young men's names, and to replace it with the names of the gods of Babylon. The mark of the true God was engraved in the names of these young men, but Nebuchadnezzar would erase all that. I think it's a shame that when Christians recall this story, they usually remember Daniel's friends by those Babylonian names they were given rather than by their Hebrew names. We also read that the Babylonians changed the diet of these young men. Now, this was no more an innocent move than changing their names or educating them in Babylonian religion and literature. The food they were to eat came from the king's table. Why was it exactly that Daniel and his friends refused to eat the king's rich food? Well, the answer isn't given explicitly in the text, but we can go through the options. Some have said that it was merely for dietary reasons. But this passage isn't saying that vegetables are superior to the king's food. And with all apologies to the doctors and the congregation, as much as a low cholesterol diet is good for you, that's not the point of the passage. We read in verse 8 that Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine. And he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. It wasn't that the food was unhealthy. Daniel and his friends felt that to eat that food would defile them. But how? Some have thought that this meant that the food they were given was ceremonially unclean according to Jewish law. And that's why Daniel and his friends didn't want to eat it. It wasn't kosher. Well, that's certainly a possibility. But there seems to be more going on here than simply an issue of kosher laws. It says that Daniel didn't want to drink the wine either. Jews were allowed to drink wine. If the issue was whether the food was kosher, why did Daniel refuse even the king's wine? This consideration has led others to posit that Daniel and his three friends didn't want to eat that food or drink that wine because the king's food and the king's wine had been consecrated to the idol gods of Babylon. To partake of that food would make them partakers at the tables of idol gods. It would mean a kind of fellowship with false gods. And that was something Daniel and his friends could not do. And there's certainly a possibility that this may have been the reason why they asked to eat vegetables only. But on the other hand, it's also possible that even the vegetables they asked for would have been dedicated to one or more of the gods of Babylon. And if there was something intrinsically evil about the Babylonian food, then Daniel would have had to abstain permanently from royal food and wine. But that doesn't seem to be the case. When Daniel describes his time of fasting in Daniel chapter 10, verse 3, he says, I ate no choice food. No meat or wine touched my lips. I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. Well, the implication is that prior to this and afterward, he did eat choice food, both meat and wine. The key to understanding the request of the four young men from Judah to abstain from the royal food and wine is noticing that, instead, they chose to eat only those things that grow naturally, grains and vegetables, and to drink naturally occurring water. What this suggests is that they adopted a simple lifestyle to constantly remind themselves of their dependence upon their Creator God for their food, not on King Nebuchadnezzar. Dependence on Nebuchadnezzar's rich food would have been defiling because it would have repeated in their own lives the sin of Hezekiah that brought this judgment upon God's people in the first place. If you, in this age of darkness in which we live, wish to live in the consciousness that you are always totally dependent on God, then think about building into your daily routines constant reminders of that dependence. That's what Daniel and his friends did. You can do it too. The simple act of giving thanks for your food serves as a reminder of the one who provided it for you. When you encounter a dangerous situation, praying to God for protection is a good way to acknowledge that He rules over everything and that you are in His hand. Pausing throughout the day to pray and to thank God for His gifts, for His providential management of the particular things that have come to pass, recognizes that we depend on Him. Fasting, going without food for a time, may also be a way to remind yourself of being dependent on Him. If you think about it, each of these ways that had just been mentioned are illustrated in the book of Daniel by Daniel or by his three friends. So Daniel, as spokesman for his three friends, asked Ashpenaz, the chief official, for permission not to eat the king's food. And you know the story. The official hesitated, but he gave in to the request to make a test of Daniel and his friends for 10 days. And when the 10 days were over, the official saw that Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah looked better than the other young men who ate the royal food, even though their diet was merely vegetables and water. The point is not that a simple diet is superior to a rich diet. The point is that God took care of Daniel and his friends because they sought to honor Him and rely upon Him above all. All else. You see, Daniel and his three friends stood for their God even in the midst of that anti-Christ, anti-God culture of Babylon. They chose to obey God regardless of the cost, rather than to give in to a culture in which they found themselves, a culture diametrically opposed to the one true God whose servants they were. And God was with them. God gave them grace in the eyes of the chief court official. God made their bodies healthy and strong. He was showing that He blesses and rewards those who choose to stand for Him and obey Him. The culture of Babylon in Daniel's day would erase the true God from existence if it could, just as the godless culture in our own time would do today. It says God gave Daniel and his three friends wisdom and understanding, which the Babylonians, by their magic arts and enchantments, couldn't even come close to. So we read in verse 20, "In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom." It wasn't the education they received in Babylon that gave them such wisdom, just as it wasn't the food they ate which made their bodies strong. It was God who rewarded them for their faithfulness, who made them wise and strong. But there's another question we have to ask. How was it that Daniel and his three friends could stand with such courage and resolution, and at such a young age, in a foreign land, and not give in to the Antichrist culture of the day? The answer to that question isn't found on the surface of our text, but it underlies it. The reason Daniel and his friends could stand for the true God in that God-denying nation was this. First, Daniel and his friends received from their parents in the home, an education, and an upbringing in the truth of God. Who had given them their names? Well, their parents, of course. Their parents gave them names that reminded them of their God. Remember that Daniel means, God is my judge. And if God is your judge, and you truly believe that, will it matter what men think of you? Will it matter even what Nebuchadnezzar thinks to the one who knows that God is my judge? Azariah means, Yahweh is my help. Who then would trust in the gods of Babylon? The Lord is more than sufficient for every need. Mishael means, who is like God, the true God? And that makes all other gods false gods. Hananiah's name means, Yahweh shows grace. Once you've experienced the rich grace of God, is there anything the gods of Babylon or of any other culture for that matter can offer that compares? Daniel and his three friends were given names by their parents that reminded them whose God they belonged to. You see, in the Bible, the upbringing of children and their education is the responsibility of parents. The scripture teaches parents to impress the truth of God on their children's lives. Remember the Lord's words to Moses in Deuteronomy? These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. And friends, that wasn't something just for the Old Testament people of God. It's for us today and for our children. The parents of Daniel and his three friends impressed the truth of God on their children's hearts. They taught their children God's law. It was written on their hearts and minds of those young men long before they were transported to Babylon. Parents, you must help your children learn the Bible, and you must help to learn them to live it. Don't ever think that you can delegate that responsibility to others. You can be assisted by others, but the responsibility is yours. Later in the book of Daniel, we learn that it was Daniel's custom to pray three times a day. It was a custom he wouldn't give up, even when the law of the king was against it. How do you think Daniel learned to pray like that? Was it something he learned on his own after he was transported to Babylon? Did he learn it from the instruction he received from the Babylonians? No, of course not. There's no doubt in my mind that Daniel's prayer life was something handed down to him from godly parents who not only instructed him how to pray, but prayed with him. You must do the same. You must teach your children to pray, and to pray for them and with them. But something else needs to be said. Not only must parents impress the truth of God on their children, children need to respond to a mother's instruction or a father's counsel by respecting it, valuing it, and obeying it. Over and over in the book of Proverbs, we're told things like, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commandments in your heart. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen well to my words of insight, that you may maintain discretion and your lips may preserve knowledge. My son, keep your father's commands and don't forsake your mother's teaching. Bind them upon your heart forever. Fasten them around your neck. When you walk, they will guide you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. When you awake, they will speak with you. We could go on and on. The point is that not only do parents have a responsibility, so do covenant children. They must hearken to godly instruction. And you can have the most godly father or mother, but it won't do you a smack of good if you reject their counsel. And you don't have to be an out-and-out rebel to do that. You can comply outwardly, but inwardly reject their good teaching. If Daniel or his friends had done that, do you think they would have been able to stand as they did? You must hearken to and obey the godly instruction of your parents. Do you know what often stands in the way? When you're a young person, there's a temptation to trust in your own judgment, to think that you know better than your parents and therefore to lean on your own understanding. But every time you reject godly instruction or counsel, or merely outwardly comply while inwardly rebelling, you're setting up a pattern of trusting in yourself. And the more you do that, the more it will make it difficult for you to trust in God, because you will have learned to rely on yourself for everything. You have a responsibility to take steps to keep the reality of God before your eyes always. You need to establish godly habits like frequent prayer to God, not ritual prayer, but heartfelt communion with your Creator and Lord. You need to keep away from the things that make God seem less real to you, things that tend to make you live in a fantasy world. You can figure out what those kind of things are. The reason so many young people complain about being bored is because they spend so much time living in a fantasy world that they don't know what to do in the real world. Don't let the entertainment world pull you into its web. The message the media sends to young people is that life as a young person is all about having fun. Is it? Is that the chief end of man? Is that what God created you for? To have fun? If you're going to stand like Daniel and his three friends did, you'll have to live in the real world. You must embrace the godly instruction in the word you receive from your parents, in the truth of the Bible you hear proclaimed at church, and you must own it as your own. It's only if you do that, that you can stand like Daniel and those three men stood. There's just one more thing to say about this chapter. Did you notice the last verse? It says, "And Daniel remained there," that means Babylon, "until the first year of King Cyrus." You can see God's sense of humor coming through, his holy laughter. Try as they might to erase the claims of God on these young men's lives, Daniel remained until the first year of King Cyrus. Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom would come and go. His son's kingdom would pass from the scene, while Daniel remained. Darius the Mede would become ruler, and Daniel would still be there. And all these great kings would turn to Daniel for counsel and advice, because Daniel knew God, and he chose to live for him. What we need today is an army of Daniels in our culture. We need young men and young women who will stand for God, who are willing to go against the flow because of their love for Christ. They won't get the faith to do that by watching television or playing video games. And they certainly won't receive that kind of instruction and upbringing from the state. Nor should Christian parents think that their children will automatically get that kind of upbringing just because we send them to a Christian school, or even if we educate them at home. Parents are the ones who have the responsibility to nurture and train their children in the fear and instruction of the Lord. And children need to know about God, but they also need to fear Him, to reverence Him. Children need to see in their parents that they, their parents, believe the Bible and love to read it. They also need to see them striving heavenward against a culture that's bent on running away from God. And you, who are young people, need to decide that standing for the truth of God is more important than anything else, even more important than having fun. Bringing up Daniels and Hananias and Mishaels and Azariahs means that we who are members of the Church of Christ must be the kind of people that the Lord has called us to be. May the Lord raise up a host of Daniels among us, those who are bold to stand for God and to live for Him when all the world is against them. Amen. Let's bow in prayer.